So unsurprisingly, this talk is called Impermanence of This Body, which is the title of the second verse of the Four Reminders. So Sangharakshita, my teacher, comments that someone with a basic knowledge of Buddhist teachings probably has all they need to travel a long way down the path. But what we lack, he says, are the emotional equivalents of our intellectual understandings. We lack the emotional equivalents of our intellectual understandings. And a consequence of this is that we simply forget what we believe to be true because we aren't, emotionally speaking, completely convinced by it. We just don't let it sink in well enough for it to influence our behaviour. And this is particularly true when it comes to keeping in mind the truth of impermanence and the truth of our own death. In the verse it says, "Furthermore, death may come at any time, and I will lose this excellent opportunity. Therefore, abandoning action solely done for this life, I shall strive day and night on this path and so make life meaningful." These verses come from Gampopa, who was writing in the 12th century in Tibet. But throughout the Dharma, these lines are and their understanding are repeated over and over again. Last year I ran a retreat for the Order on the Dasa Dharma Sutta, and there are some very strong verses which reflect this. And because I did a bit of work then, I'm going to use it again. So it echoes these verses from the time of the Buddha. And the Dasa Dharma Sutta is a series of reflections, and I'm going to talk about three of them in this talk. So the first one is, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. This should be reflected upon again and again by one who has gone forth. Whatever we love and are attached to will be taken from us. When you die, you leave everything behind. You do not get to the end of your to-do list. There will be things left undone. We do not survive our own death, and yet we often act as if we were immortal. In the Bodhicaryavatara, Santideva says, "This body is but an object on loan. In a moment, life breaks its word." This is an invitation for us not to hold on to acquisitions, status, situations, experience, and even in the end, our own physical body. In the Parinirvana Sutta, the Buddha, he uses this fantastic phrase, he relinquishes the life force. He actively relinquishes the life force. He puts aside his life in full consciousness and gave up to death willingly. I think this is something that can be done. I watched my father do this, choose to die, and it's a very strong thing. A friend of mine in my chapter was very ill last Christmas, and she'd made all sorts of plans, see her family, go on holiday with her girlfriend. You know, she'd got a lovely time ahead of her. And she couldn't do any of it. She couldn't do any of it. And she came to my chapter and she said to me, "This is what death is like," she said. "You stop and the world continues." What a realization. What a fantastic thing to notice. The The second verse from the Dharma Dasadharma Sutta I want to talk about says, "The days and nights are relentlessly passing. This should be reflected upon again and again by one who has gone forth." This is about the reality that with every waking morning life, our life becomes shorter. Every morning our life becomes a day shorter. One day we will wake into the day that we die. Nagarjuna says, "Many things threaten life, which is even more ephemeral than a bubble full of air. How amazing is this opportunity to exhale after inhaling and to wake from sleep." So this reflection is an invitation to get on with our practice as well as we can every single day of our lives. It can be seen as a reminder of the urgency of our practice. The truth of our own death brings us up against the question, what am I doing with this life? What is important to me? How do I act in this knowledge? I think Sangharakshita said, he said something like, is that plan like you will live forever and practice as if it's your last day. Something like that. The third of the verses from the Dasadharma Sutta. "Have I experienced any profound truth or wise insights so that when facing death, I need not feel ashamed when questioned by my spiritual companions? This should be reflected upon again and again by one who has gone forth." The reality is that the practice we do in this lifetime will be halted on the day we die. And will it be enough? This is an invitation to review our effort and progress while we are alive, so that we will not be disappointed with ourselves at the end of our lives. Taking on the truth of death can be an encouragement to practice. I used to work in a hospital, and I used to do discharge on a ward which was full of very elderly people. And I remember very early on in my practice, and when I was just meeting the Dharma and starting to meditate, meeting a man with so many regrets, so many regrets. He wished he'd done it this way. He wished he'd spent more time with friends. He wished he'd followed a creative life. He was really, really ill, and I was very shocked. And it really brought me up against what I was doing with my life. I do not want to die in regret. I really do not want to die in regret. And I also worked at one stage in an old people's home. I worked in several old people's homes. And I remember we used to have a woman in the home who was a very strong Catholic. She was a very strong Catholic. And she was terrified of sleep. She was terrified of sleep in case she died without seeing her priest. And I thought, I'm not choosing that one. I am thinking that it's not a form of faith that I wish to practice that is destructive. I want a form of faith. I want a belief system which supports me at the time of my death and does not destroy me like it was destroying this woman. So, you know, there are useful things going out there that you can take notice of, how other people conduct their lives and how you feel about it. So we can ask the questions, when I come to die, how will I feel about my life? Will I feel that I have used my time well to penetrate and realize the teachings of the Buddha? Can I die without regret? Although these sections of the sutta refer to our death, the reflections are also about how we live this life, faced with the reality of our own death. It's very easy to distance ourselves from our own death. I can think that hopefully the old lady called Komisuri, lying on her deathbed, will not be the person I know today. But of course, in some way, it will be me. Facing death is often discouraged in the culture that we live in. I was very fortunate. For 28 years, I lived in the hills over there in Wales. And I was in contact with the seasons. I was in contact with rotting carcasses of sheep. I was in contact with life coming into being, blossoming, fading, dying away, becoming compost. Fantastic, one of the miracles of the world. And then life starting up again. So I was always I'm very much in contact with that. But if you live in a city, it's easy to believe that that does not go on. And it's worthwhile having a pot plant, even if you don't have anything else. We teach our children, about death, having hamsters, you know, who only live 18 months, which is great. Don't go anywhere near gerbils, they last much too long. But, you know, we actively teach children about death, and we need to teach ourselves, too, of that reality. In our culture, death seems to have stopped being part of everyday life and is hidden discreetly behind the somber windows of the funeral director. I don't know if I'm going to say, I've got a bit of a story. Okay, I work for the order, and one of the things that I am given to do is to, when Sangharakshita dies, we've got plans for his funeral and things like that. We've been planning for his funeral for over 20 years now. So may it be another 20 years before it happens. And recently I met with the man who is his funeral director, a very delightful man in his probably early 40s, something like that. And we were talking about what happens after somebody dies and what funeral directors do. And his language was so careful and full of euphemism in the nicest possible way. We understood what he was saying, but he didn't actually say nuts and bolts way. And at one stage I thought, perhaps I just need to say to him, he can just use plain, ordinary English, because we don't mind knowing the truth of death. It's okay with us. And then I thought, I could probably say we don't mind that because we do the six element practice, and we disassemble our bodies and see them rot. And I thought, don't say that, because you'll probably shock him.
Yes.
You know, so he was worried about shocking us, and then I got worried about shocking him, so I didn't say anything. But we do meet the truth of our own death through our practice. And it is quite different from a cultural way of dealing with it. Our culture seems to think that we can be forever young. 60 is the new 40, apparently. Not so. We pretend it's not going to happen, or it was going to happen in the far-flung, unimaginable future. When I was a young woman and my children were very small, my partner was extremely ill. And at one stage, we thought he was not going to survive. And I used to walk down the road with Grey, and I could see people crossing over because they couldn't face meeting him. Because they didn't know what to say. They couldn't bring themselves to confront a person who was at that time facing death. It's very cruel. When younger people die, we see them as victims. What are they victims of? If this happens, this is what life is like. I've had two friends who have lost two babies each. It's the reality. One of them I went to see in hospital. And I sent to see her and I said, I do not know why I'm here, because I have nothing to say to you. I have nothing to offer you. She said, you came. She said, everybody else is staying away. They can't face it. People are encouraged to have bucket lists. I do feel that these trivialise life. And the meaning and purpose is reduced to bungee jumping, climbing Everest, and travelling the world. It's not real to me. To face our own death is to turn towards death. To turn towards death is to live more fully and with awareness of our choices in this life. In the stories about Padmasambhava, he meets Queen Nang Chung, and Queen Nang Chung asks him to give her some teachings of special importance, and he replies, "Listen, Queen Nang Chung, to begin with, pay urgent attention to impermanence." And then later on he says, "This is the preliminaries, without no means exists. You're not going to live forever, you've got to get on with it." He's very definite, Padmasambhava usually is, very definite. We can choose to live with more clarity, conviction and urgency. We need this sense of urgency. So these three verses encourages us to not be unhealthily attached to anything, not to define ourselves through who we are, what we do, who we know, and so on. We can move into experiencing just the ebb and flow of impermanence. We can practice today, not tomorrow. We can ask the question, am I doing enough? Am I treading water? Am I creating my life based on my principles and practice? Is this in line with my understanding of the Dharma? As a very early friend of mine in the Buddhist life used to say to me, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. It's a good motto. So do whatever you have to do to make progress, and do it now, and love it. Just love it. We don't know what's going to happen. We can't afford to think, I have met somebody like this, I shall practice when I retire. Yeah, I'll practice when I retire, or when I'm less busy. Yeah, and we need to do whatever we need to do now. The washing up can wait. Facing our own death is also an invitation to live more fully and more responsibly. By clearly facing death, we often challenge other people's views and the assumptions of our society. When my partner in Wales was really ill, my grandmother came to visit me. And I remember standing in the kitchen and my grandmother saying to me, whispering to me, "How's Grey?" Because it wasn't something she wanted to talk to him about, or even me openly. And I said to her, "You'll have to ask him." And she was really cross with me. She was really cross with me because she wanted me to mediate the situation, and I refused to do so. So that I actually take on, you know, there's ways that I can take on this kind of practice of facing death. So I do actually think about my death most days. And one of the things that I do, which is kind of, a challenge to me and also a pleasure, is that I conduct funerals. I know Samantha Badri does too. Because this is a way of bringing this truth into real life. And I have been with people who have been dying, and they have instructed me how to run their funerals before they die. When I first came to live in Sheffield, I was introduced to a woman called Kath, who had motor neurone disease, and she had two sisters die of motor neurone disease, which is very cruel, and she knew exactly what was in front of her. and she was looking for some. She said to me, "I want help. I need help to do this. I do not want to die hating myself. I do not want to die hating myself." And she and I met most weeks for 3 years before she died. And then she asked me to conduct her funeral. And her funeral was amazing. We had the Metta Sutta and we sang the Internationale. It was great. One of the best, anyway, I think funerals are good, but this one was very particular. And I, you know, it was a gift that she gave to me to be able to sit, to be beside someone going through that process and then celebrate them. You know, it was a fantastic gift. Practicing through an awareness of death is about abandoning actions which are done solely for the effect they have in this lifetime. We are not practicing for the sake of making samsara more comfortable, easier to put up with, but to make real progress with insight in mind. When we die, it's only the deepest part of our being that matters, and the legacy of our life and actions. It's not easy to stay open to the truth of death without despondency, horrified anxiety, denial, depression. How do we meet this human condition? We need to nourish and care for ourselves and others within the uncertainty of this life. We can forgive and be forgiven. We can learn to trust and love the Dharma. I'm going to read out the fantastic sutta that Suchitta read at the beginning of this read. I'm going to read it out again because it's very important. So this is to Mahanama. Thus I have heard. Once the Buddha was staying amongst the Shakyans, and Mahanama, the Shakyan, went to the Buddha and bowed to him and sat down to one side. Then he said to the Blessed One, "At times my mindfulness of the Buddha becomes muddied. My mindfulness of the Dharma becomes muddied. My mindfulness of the Sangha becomes muddied. Then the thought occurs to me, if I were to die this moment, what would happen to me? What would be my future course?" "Have no fear, Mahanama, have no fear. Your death will not be a bad one. If one's mind has long been nurtured with faith, nurtured with virtue, nurtured with the study of the Dharma, nurtured with renunciation and a simple life, nurtured with wisdom, then when this body, which is born of mother and father, and nourished with rice and porridge, subject to impermanence, decay and death, when this body is eaten by vultures, dogs and hyenas, nevertheless, the fate of the mind will not be a bad one." "What do you think, Mahanama? Suppose a tree was leaning towards the east, slanting towards the east, inclining towards the east. When its root is cut, which way will it fall? In whichever way it was leaning and inclining, Lord. In the same way, Mahanama, a disciple of the noble ones, leans towards liberation, slants towards liberation, inclines towards liberation. Have no fear, Mahanama, have no fear. Your death will not be a bad one. Your demise will not be bad." We can trust the word of the Buddha. We can trust the Dharma. When we have the capacity to be moved by life and its transitory nature, we can live in the true beauty of the fleeting moment. I'm going to read a quote from Dennis Potter, who was an extraordinary playwright. And he said this in a BBC interview as he was dying of lung cancer, lighting up another cigarette. And sipping his morphine. Yeah, that's right. So he said, "Blossom is out in full now. It's a plum tree. It looks like apple blossom, but it's white. It's the whitest, frothiest, blossomest blossom that ever could be, and I can see it. Things are both more trivial than they ever were and more important than they ever were. And the difference between the trivial and the important doesn't seem to matter. But the nowness of everything is absolutely wondrous. This is to do with this perspective that you can get when you're close to death. Whether your own or somebody else's, you get a different kind of perspective. And in a way, we're looking today at that kind of perspective. We will experience gratitude for our life, a delight in day-to-day beauty. We can love everything and everybody just for the sake of it. So knowing the truth of impermanence can also be joyful and life-enhancing. We can do what we really want. We can take risks. We can try things out. You can find out who you really are. We can recognise our habits and free ourselves from them. Fantastic. I made a decision in 2006 on retreat, a very strong retreat I did. It was my intention at the end of the retreat to just speak out and tell my truth. And it changed my life. It did simply that. I decided to take risks and speak my truth, and it's one of the best things I've ever decided. Just a couple of thoughts to finish. I've had some very pretty odd experiences in my life that make no sense, run counter to my understanding of the world and how it works, yet are true. They are true, my experiences. I know that I don't know everything. I know that life is mysterious and I cannot really know what death is. Sometimes I see this body that I have as in itself a limitation. I know empirically that our senses are limited. We don't see the whole range of light that exists. I can't hear as well as a bat can, even with my hearing aid. And compared to a beagle, my sense of smell is woeful. Apparently I have enough senses in my nose to cover a matchbox, whereas a beagle has enough to cover two football fields. And that's only the things we know about. You know, I just think sometimes I have a strong sense that our human faculties are real restrictions. Mostly people see death as a limitation, but maybe it isn't. Maybe it's a freedom. May we all make good progress and live in joy.